Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins, along with a house full of Nove.
Yes. You know, we got cats, we got my significant other, we've got kids. It's a big, full, cozy house out here.
It's an ark. It's an ark, and it's about to rain.
There's a lot of love in the Casa de la Nove, Hawkins.
Or it's a cult. It might be a cult. Yeah, and we might have to send the ATF.
I mean, okay, when I say love, it's worship of the dear leader.
You're a North Korean cult?
I like to think of myself as like, okay, so there are several figures through history that I think of myself as, notably David Koresh.
Jim
yeah.
Jones, big are you fan of him.
No, let me ask you, are you familiar with the Unabomber?
Am I familiar with
yes. Have you ever heard of him?
Ted Kaczynski? Yes.
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. A little bit of him. And there was this guy, wrote some songs, Charlie Manson. Maybe you've heard some of his tunes. And yeah.
Yeah, but are all those guys smart?
In their own ways. Like, I mean, you know.
Kaczynski was an Ivy leaguer, so you never know. Thing,
like him or hate him, you got to give him credit.
No, you do not have to hand it to him, as a matter of
you
fact.
Don't, you don't? No. Okay. All right. Like,
you're sounding like me in college, because I was fascinated with Jonestown in college. I would make Jonestown jokes every chance I could get. I just, for some reason, I delved deep into whatever I could read or whatever about the People's Temple.
Look, here's all I'm going to say, Hawkins. America was founded on freedom of religion. I don't see what's wrong with cults.
Wow. Well, you know, I could make a joke here that would turn off about 75% of our listeners, so I will not do that at this time. All right, let's head into the wrestling here. Bit of sad news. We will not dwell upon it, but Mike Halleck, a.k.a. Mantar, passing away at the age of 55, also known as Bruiser Mastino. Other short-lived gimmicks in there. He was a bodyguard for Goldust, I think, for 2 weeks, and he was also in the original Truth Commission under a mask as Tank. Just during that time when they were just putting goofy stuff. I believe this was the new generation era of WWF. Don't quote me. Famously, half man, half minotaur. All not very good. This would probably be around the time you were starting to like wrestling, yes?
Yes, I'm definitely familiar with Mantar. And
what's your favorite Mantar moment, Chris Novak?
So I have to say, when he came through the curtain the first time and did the arms to the left, that just really stuck with me. Like he did the arms coming up.
Yeah, I have
a follow-up. No, hold on.
Okay.
I have a follow-up question for you. Yes. When it comes to the Truth Commission, were you more of a sniper or recon guy?
I'm trying to remember the original leader of the Truth Commission before it was Osiris. Was it Colonel DeBeers? The guy who was originally Colonel DeBeers or not? Ooh. I need to look that up real quick. Because, boy, those South African gimmicks. Nothing gets over like a good non-South African playing a South African. So says Rocco Rock in the something memorial tag team tournament in WCW, where he and I think it was Phil Apollo were playing. He was playing Colonel Kruger and the other was playing Colonel the Clerk, and they were a tag team from South Africa. It was just the worst. Okay, let me see.
And Americans love world news stories like South Africa. So
I got Truth and Reconciliation Commission disambiguate. Oh my God, what is going on with Wikipedia? All right, give me the wrestling one for God's sakes. A professional wrestling stable. Okay, here we go. It was originally in USWA, and Tank, who was Bruiser Mastino, Mike Halleck, blah blah blah. The Commandant. Okay, the Commandant was Robin Bokirk Smith, a South African actor.
Oh, so I mean, this is authentic casting.
No, yes. No, he was actually an actor, not a wrestler. Okay, cool. Is he in anything I've ever seen? That's the question. Now, this is just time wasting, and everybody's yelling at us, but I don't care right now because I'm in a Wikipedia.
Well, I think honestly, what people are yelling at you about right now is that once again you dodged one of my probing questions.
Okay.
Recon. I mean, who carried who?
I think wasn't Recon Bull Buchanan? I think it was.
So you're more of a Recon man.
I'm more of a Recon guy, I think.
Me too.
Let's see, Recon. Recon was Bull Buchanan. I was right about that. I liked Bull Buchanan back in the day.
Bull Buchanan was actually pretty good.
And he was actually pretty good in New Japan, too, for a very short run. Also did not know originally that Mike Halleck was cousins with PN News, which, boy, that family got the short shrift on gimmicks, didn't they?
Yeah, this is like a proud family of jobbers.
Oh, I just remember, like, they paired him. There was a WWE magazine, I think, or WWF magazine spread with Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and it was like, I mean, you know Vince, man, he's just gonna make fun of fat guys. So he was the sloppy fat guy going out to dinner with the Connecticut Blue Blood, and how distasteful that this half man, half minotaur. I mean, half minotaur.
There's a real opportunity missed to have
a minotaur is already
several vignettes with the Mantor.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's a beloved gimmick.
Yeah.
And yeah, I hope, honestly, I hope in the future someone takes it up.
No, we should not make fun of the dick, though. That's
no. Like, Mantor is like one of the, I mean, it's kind of up there with like Bastion Booger or something, though.
Yes, like, and they almost treated him similarly because it's funny.
Bastion Booger actually beat Owen Hart. So, like, there's actually no kind of comparison there.
Well, oddly enough, there were things that I thought were attributed to Mantor that were actually attributed to Bastion Booger, because I thought they made fun of him, like, oh, he hangs out in a field with cows. So I thought they were saying, can you smell him from out here? But it turns out that was Bastion Booger that they were making fun of his smell. You know, it's just the usual stupid what Vince does with these types of guys. So let's move on.
Yeah.
Reading from the Wrestling Observer, the bloodline angle and trial of Roman Reigns set what is believed to be a first in the 75 or so years that pro wrestling has been on television, with the July 7th show from Madison Square Garden. Is believed to be the first week in history that the number one show for the week in English network television was a pro wrestling show. There have been many weeks where cable's top show is a wrestling show dating back to the infancy of cable, and oftentimes outside of football season for Raw. SmackDown nearly did this 1 week ago, but a NASCAR race beat a 0.71 to 0.70. The show did 2,561,000 viewers, but the key number was a 0.76 in 18-49. Biggest number of the week in both English language network television and all of television, with 986,000 viewers in 18-49 and a 0.59 in 18-34. However, it ended up in third place overall in both categories behind two Copa Oro Gold Cup soccer games on Univision.
Where is, like, this is not even a joking question. Where is, like, the online wrestling community right now with regards to the relevancy of the demo? We still put a lot of weight on it, or have we cooled off on how much weight we put on it?
If AEW wins the demo, they win the demo. If SmackDown wins the demo, it's these stupid fans are into cinema type of a thing. It's very, very weird to me. I mean, it's not weird. No, it's not surprising.
I was just asking if there's been any sort of like kind of leveling out of where this is. So
there's no leveling out. If WWE has positive news, the AEW fans get very, very angry. And if AEW has positive news, the AEW fans get very angry, and the WWE fans come in to make fun of them or something. I don't know.
I gotta ask, what good is the demo? Like, I mean, if you can't use it all the time, what good is it any time? But that's a whole different thing. But I mean, I put weight in it. I think it matters.
It's important for advertising rates. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
And that gets me to my second point here, which is I remember some time ago I said, comparing the Usos and the Young Bucks, that I thought that Jey Uso has more of an ability to carry a program than either of the Bucks. And I feel really vindicated in watching that segment, seeing what the numbers were.
Yeah.
I mean, he clearly they gave him the moniker of main event Jey Uso, but like, he clearly has elevated as a character to the point of being like a main event standalone character over the last couple of years here. It's been considerable growth. He does a good job carrying the scenes when he needs to carry the scenes on a number of different times here. And I don't think it's like just happenstance that the bloodline angle keeps popping these really big numbers, because even when I am bored with WWE, which I kind of am right now, and I don't even love, like, I'm bored with the bloodline angle, but like, when I hear there's another good bloodline segment, that is always on my watch digest. I always do make some extra time, like, in what I'm going to watch, to make sure I watch the bloodline segment, because they are consistently good.
I agree. There was an interesting question within the figure four board this week.
Give it to me. I want to answer the interesting question.
All right. In hindsight now, was beating Cody at WrestleMania the right thing?
No.
Okay. I agreed with you. There are some people that said yes. And I was like, that's ridiculous.
That's a short no that actually doesn't need more.
Because we could still be doing this program right now with Roman not having one of those titles.
Literally, there's nothing that's happening right now that couldn't be happening with Cody Rhodes as champion, and Cody Rhodes should be champion right now. And it's more intriguing. And like Roman's intrigue as an actual singles champion is waning, like in terms of the matches. You know, they're good matches, but like we've seen every iteration of the Roman Reigns match at this point. There's just nothing else to do.
All In and All Out are on back-to-back weeks. All In and All Out will also be pay-per-views on back-to-back weeks, Chris. Looks to be like,
how much are they? They're gonna be like $60 a piece.
I believe they are going to be $60 a piece.
Well, that's commitment, baby.
There is a rumor that you might be able to get a package deal, but that has not been confirmed yet. I'm gonna be very interested in the line of demarcation in terms of the rosters, if anybody's doing double duty, because my feeling right now is that the Wembley show is going to be Dynamite, and that the show in Chicago is going to be Punk and his Collision Crew. I have no feelers out to anybody if that's true or not, but that is an interesting test of their audience and base. And it's even more interesting due to this story from Fightful Select. Warner Brothers Discovery sources confirmed to Fightful Select that one of the major proposals from their end to All Elite Wrestling as it relates to an extension is the subject of pay-per-views, or if you're WWE, premium live events. Specifically, a WBD source told Fightful that they mentioned the very likely possibility of significantly expanding the AEW pay-per-view schedule even to one a month. We're told that this is something that Warner Brothers Discovery has wanted. We aren't sure on if those would be standalone or including the Max streaming deal, as WWD sources would not elaborate on that. AEW has already expanded their special event schedule, adding Forbidden Door last year and AEW All In this year. However, there have been no broadcast plans revealed as of yet, although I just updated that. Nothing in the deal is finalized to our knowledge, and this could change. Chris.
I just don't think that AEW can support a once a month $60 a pay-per-view model. I think the price point would have to come down considerably. People ain't got it like that, especially not wrestling fans. $60 is a ton of money.
I agree. I mean,
like once a quarter, okay. But I even think they're like maximizing the price point on that. I would argue, and they might be able to. I think they could lower the price point, probably balance out the buy rates, and even come out slightly ahead. Like I think they might be having it too high right now. But I just cannot imagine a scenario where they do a once a month thing, with their numbers being consistently under a million viewers for their flagship show right now, and they don't just basically wear that base out. Because now, I mean, here's the other thing, then you're stacking 60 times 12 and you're comping that to WWE Network, which is like what, $13.99 a month?
Yes. Something like that.
And you can even do an annual package. And I think they were like practically giving it away at one point.
During Christmas, January type of thing. Yeah, you can get it for like $4.99 a month or something like that if you bought a year.
Yeah. I don't know, man. For standalone pay-per-view versus a library plus all the live events and everything like that, I think AEW needs to. If I were them, I mean, we're talking conjecturally, but I would not consider the monthly pay-per-view model any further.
I think the criticism that Ring of Honor pay-per-views, if you include in that already gets them up to 10 when nobody watches Ring of Honor pay-per-views for the most part, other than a very dedicated 10 to 25,000 maybe, is bogus. I think it would make Tony Khan's booking even lazier. And I already think he's kind of lazy in his builds to pay-per-views. He's a great matchmaker. If you give him 3 weeks to build, it's going to turn into WWE with 50-50 booking. Somebody beats somebody 1 week, somebody beats somebody the next week. And then we go to the pay-per-view and we rinse and repeat. I'm not a big fan of WWE.
Bi-monthly might tighten them up. I think maybe they expand out to six, and like that would tighten up Tony's storytelling week to week a little bit so that the shows have a little bit more narrative push. But
I like the four or five now, Chris. I just wish they'd do more as opposed to announce everything a week or two before the pay-per-view.
I find that programs have a lull usually in between. Like this Adam Cole MJF thing is so holding pattern-y to me and is a thing I've come to associate with this quarterly rhythm.
Well, a memo went out this week to AEW talent saying that they need permission from coaches to do the following moves out of a need for safety. Spots and bumps on the ring apron and outside, table, ladder, chair spots in and out of the ring, and they're only allowed with padding. Any elevated spots outside of the barricades, dives and ladder spots on stage, around the arena, and other places outside of the ring. All pile driver tombstone variations, including sit-down drivers, inverted poison hurricanrana, and vertebreakers. High-risk dives or top rope moves. Intentional bleeding of any sort, not just blading, throwing people into, through, over ring steps, commentary table, bell table, or guardrails, barricades, any weapon usage, including chairs, pipes, kendo sticks, hammers, ring bells, bats, chains, etc., thumbtacks, skewers, barbed wire, and other sharp puncturing objects, powders, aerosol sprays, or liquids, throwing any objects, choking or strangling with hands or a weapon or hanging spots, injury spots or angles, any physicality in the crowd or crowd brawling, any physicality involving referees, managers, extra celebrities, or special guests. Also, I don't have this on this list, but I remember seizures are also something that need to be cleared through a coach. Interesting. I guess someone may have taken some liberty in planning a match or something to that effect, or they're just trying to cover their butts so that they don't, people just don't decide to do things willy-nilly. Chris, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, like I am legitimately interested on what the prompt was for all of these new edicts coming down, right?
It's a safety thing.
Thoroughgoing is my thought. I mean, like, yeah. When I heard, like, all top rope moves, I'm like, oh, okay, Bill Watts.
Joke on Twitter. I go, Bill Watts from 92 has entered the chat.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, all right. No going over the top rope. Like,
I think it's twofold. I think it's number one to prevent stuff like the MJF throwing the, I think it was vodka on a child type of thing. And I think since there's been a rash of injuries in AEW, they're just making sure that a performer who is more than willing to do one of these moves actually has the talent / capabilities to do it, I think, and do it safely, and that the other person taking the move knows how to take it. Because you're getting, and you're seeing this a lot now, with wrestlers who have a language barrier in the ring, especially, let's say, someone working with the luchadors who like to do a lot of high-risk stuff. I get this need for safety, and I get that a lot more people in wrestling are now getting more and more injured. I just think it's more of a, they're taking far too many high risks on a week-to-week basis type of thing.
Right, no, I mean, there are some of these moves that I do think need to be pared down substantially, like the poison ranas, the apron spots. Like, those have been in excess. They are done to limited effect, oftentimes in the middle of the match. Look, if someone's finisher was a poison rana, that'd be legit, but like right now, people,
transition spot.
It's a transition spot. Yeah. Like, and it's a very, very risky transition spot. The stuff about the pile driver kind of cracks me up, because it's like, I mean, yes, theoretically it's dangerous, but it's also like one of the safer moves, like if done correctly.
A real pile driver is a very safe move.
Right, right.
Exactly. A tombstone pile driver, yeah, there's some risk there, but all I could also think of was also back around 92, 93 was the Smoky Mountain angle, and they've done this in other territories where they banned Paul Orndorff from using the pile driver.
And let us never forget that at one point Jerry Lawler's pile driver caused cancer.
Yes.
One of my favorite angles in professional wrestling of all time.
Although of interest, Kenny Omega this week gave a interview to Sports Illustrated, and they actually addressed the Tiger Driver 91 that everybody was criticizing with Will Ospreay in that match. And how it looked like, I think, was it Kenny landed on his head, I think, on that one? And they were like saying, why are you doing that at this point in the match or whatever? His quote, don't tell Mike Tyson how to box and don't tell Tyson Smith how to wrestle. You aren't even close to being qualified. Just shut the F up.
Okay, but I've also like absolutely watched this guy on that chiropractic YouTube channel and
getting
about
hammered,
getting hammered and talking about how completely busted up his body is. So, you know, okay, I mean, yeah, like, no, I haven't ever done it, but if I do have like a separated shoulder, I like look at this, go, I don't know that I would want to do that. And if I has that much wear and tear on my body, I guess I would be thinking about the deployment of those spots a little bit more judiciously. He can do whatever he wants. He's also not Mike Tyson.
No, he is not. Brian Pillman Jr.'s contract not renewed with AEW, but of real interest, later this week, Brian Pillman Jr. was at the WWE Performance Center doing some training. Chris, is there any chance at all that WWE decides to pick him up?
Maybe to fill out the NXT roster. I don't necessarily see him soaring all that high. He's got a good look. I mean, I guess if he could figure out the promo thing.
I think Impact is the place for him, because Impact will give him those reps on promos, and they'll give him the reps in the ring. And then if he can, you know, put it all together, both AEW or NXT would be a good landing spot after a run somewhere small. You know, I mean, you hate to say a national company small, but Impact is like, you know, off of a lot of people's radar.
Yeah, exactly. No, like Impact's off the radar. It would give him a chance to, I mean, as a mid-card champion or something like that in Impact, like that's a company that, you know, could support doing that for him. And that might give him a chance to find his sea legs as a solo act. I mean, I liked the Hollywood Blondes or the Varsity Blondes or whatever they were.
I did too. I like Griff Garrison a lot too, and he's not been used either. Again, I think there's just a glut of athletic kind of vanilla personality mid-carders in this AEW roster, and they don't know what to do with them. They really don't at times. They go out and do a good match, and then they wonder why they just aren't over all the time. And you're like, okay, you know, I think you're starting to see some commander fatigue, because all he does is you know, those couple of really big high spots, and then that's kind of it.
I mean, he's very solid. No one would say that Commander's not very good. He is very good. But someone could be very good and also boring. For example, Dolph Ziggler.
Yes. You know, I also think once you've seen the big high spot, okay. If he does it every week, it becomes rote. It doesn't become
right. No, there's no character work or characterization or anything behind the big high spot. It's just not, there's nothing to connect to.
Ring of Honor has a pay-per-view next Friday. There's only one match announced, and one half of that match can no longer do it. Mark Briscoe, going through an injury, had to pull out of the match. Darn shame, because he was having a heck of a run in AEW as well. But again, it points to, hey, how come we haven't been booking a Ring of Honor pay-per-view match and hyping those up? It was a one-match card so far, and now half that match is out. Feels very UFC a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, this is always the issue with Ring of Honor as this, like, standalone company, you know, from the AEW empire, or, like, trying to still keep it going on. I just don't know that there's enough there to support it without basically importing a ton of AEW every pay-per-view.
Yeah, and they already have a lot of those. Like, Claudio's your Ring of Honor champion, for example.
Right. Yeah,
but, I mean, he's in big Blood and Guts match on Wednesday.
It's like AEW to me at this point is like three bizarro lands. You have AEW Prime, which is Dynamite. Then you have the Collision universe. And then you have the Ring of Honor universe. And there's like some intersection and alignment in the multiverse, but like they don't, the universes don't actually ever fully overlap or only very periodically do.
Earth 3 Claudio is a good guy, while Earth 1 Claudio is a bad.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like the Superman sort of like,
yes,
you know, bizarro stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jushin Liger will be a special guest for the finals of the Owen. Oh, give me a Jushin and AEW match. Although they just fired Brian Pillman Jr. So,
you know, I mean, see, like Jushin mentoring Brian Pillman Jr. would be great. Great characterization, yeah. Stuff like that actually would probably go a long way to help get Pillman over, because people love Jushin. He doesn't have to even say anything, like,
and
so
he doesn't have to do much either. So
no, like, he just literally has to come out there and, like, you know, clap and, like, you know, like basically just rev him up and, like, occasionally be in peril, and then Pillman goes to make the save to Liger, and of course that is, you know, will be received beautifully. That to me would actually be a really good deployment of Liger. It sounds really weird to say Jushin Liger as manager, but kind of there for that.
Yeah. In a name I never thought would come back to the wrestling world, but it is GCW September 2nd. The return of Lash LaRue, Chris.
Man, Lash LaRue. He's only got to be, he's like late 40s.
I think so. I'll look it up. You probably know more about Lash than I do, because
Lash LaRue, of course, the tag team partner of Lenny Lane.
Yes.
I remember Lash LaRue having matches with Jericho back in WCW back in the day. Lenny Lane also had matches with Jericho back in the day. And, like,
yes.
In fairness to Jericho's work with both of them back then, it helped to get both those guys over.
Yes.
Especially Lenny Lane, who went from being like a jobber to like being an undercarder, like an actual legitimate working undercarder in that company.
46 years old.
46, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, why not? If Edge can do it, what is to stop Lash LaRue from coming back and having the greatest wrestling match ever? Capital.
Well, slow down Capital there, brother. Right?
Yeah. No, brother, you slow down. Slow your roll.
No, I saw some of Lash. It was just, he was really getting primed and becoming when he was doing the Corporal Cajun thing, and that was when, mm-hmm, I was really getting out of WCW. I was just like, God, this is all, what is Bischoff doing to my beloved former NWA Mid-Atlantic wrestling?
No, I mean, even like the Russo stuff for me as a younger person was like, I didn't like it because I just wanted them to do like the old school cruiserweight stuff that I liked in 96 and 97. Like, Vince Russo just simply had no interest in like a quality match like that. Like, the format that Bischoff had settled into and like,
yeah,
that era was good for me.
I'll do it for the news now to the lazy river of wrestling criticism. And my God, there's a lot of lazy river. Oh, maybe even more next week, because I didn't even realize this when I was watching Dynamite, though. There's a Battle of the Belts this weekend. There's only one match announced for it, but apparently we're doing a Battle of the Belts, headlined by Shawn Spears and Luchasaurus. But whatever we watched, be it historical or social media or whatever we want to comment on the world of wrestling, can do it here. I am going to start this week because I am going to gush once again. My wrestling fandom wants to make babies with Collision. I love Collision. I love this show. It's so well-paced for my personal taste. I love that it combines the best parts of the two Saturday night shows that I'm used to. Saturday night's main event and 6:05. The promos at the top are fantastic. FTR and Jay White and Juice Robinson was a fantastic tag team wrestling match. And it got, FTR hasn't been this motivated in a long, well, you can't say that because the Briscoes. I can't say that. But I mean, in terms of old Southern style, instead of kind of doing the Briscoes style, this was great. I haven't been as high on the Bang Bang Gang as others, but Jay White and Juice Robinson as a team here were fantastic as well. They're doing 2 out of 3 falls tomorrow night, Chris. Set your DVR, please. I know that you are not a regular watcher of Collision, but please take my word for it. Punk and Joe was also some, I mean, I love grizzled old man Samoa Joe. I compare him to modern day, more athletic Wahoo McDaniel. Well, he'll just beat the crap out of you. He doesn't look like he's happy to be there. He just wants to get paid and go home. He's so awesome. It's like me. I just want to get paid and go home and sleep on my couch. That's all I want. But yes, Collision is now my new darling. I love it. I cherish this show. And I think it sets the right tone for me. It's I have to kind of mea culpa a little bit because it feels, the wrestling style on the show actually feels a little bit more older school as well, as opposed to, it feels more like a traditional wrestling show versus Dynamite, which feels like they're trying to do a super indie every week. And I found myself this week on Dynamite, Chris, tuning out until after it came back from the commercial in every match, because the stuff that led up to the commercial just didn't matter. And it's a little bit how I watch Raw these days too.
That's how I watch both of these shows.
Yeah.
I mean, and this is not a new grievance for me. This has been a complaint that I have had about the commercial break mid-match for a long time. It renders all of the art prior to the commercial break utterly meaningless because there's nothing. They don't even do the good stuff until the other side of the commercial break. Like, you maybe get one good spot at the beginning of the pre-commercial break part, and that usually is to set the table for the commercial break. So then, like, why wouldn't I get like 85% of the good stuff in half the time? So I'm always doing that. But you know, I think that's a valid complaint, but I also think that AEW and Raw have both suffered from that problem for a long time. And I think it's inherent to the format.
Your turn, sir.
All right. So I watched AEW Dynamite here. We already, I guess, talked about Commander. I mean, I'm with you on the Commander fatigue thing. Like, you know, it really just feels like he's becoming a prelim guy. He went from being a showcase guy to being in the opening match every week to then begs the question, does that not make you a prelim guy?
I think half the problem in this match was Chris Jericho. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think Chris Jericho knew which style he wanted to wrestle him with, because he was doing part almost big man bully against Commander, you know, the slow plodding, be the big guy, but he also wanted to do athletic, like cruiserweight moves.
I want to keep 20
years
you.
Past his, he was 20 years past his prime to be able to do somersaults and roll throughs and things like that. And it looked like he was in slow motion from time to time as well.
Yeah, no, his match style does not reflect a knowledge of his physical limits. I'll put it that way. Then I guess, I mean, the other big sort of storyline here that was kind of like wrapping through this was the Adam Cole and MJF stuff. For me, all the additional characterization isn't making me, it's goofy, man. Like MJF, yes. Like I've never had friends. Like it, what a cool thing for your world champion to say. Ric Flair had friends, paid them with money. Ric Flair definitely had friends. Nick Bockwinkel had friends. He had Bobby Heenan. He had other people he paid with money. MJF being like, I've always been alone my whole life. Like it's not, it's, I guess, supposed to be baby face, almost sort of baby facing, but also like now, I guess maybe it's just a reflection of my age. When I hear someone go like, he's so alone, I'm always like, well, what do you do? Like, what's the deal with you, buddy or person?
I think I've gotten some clarity on this. from watching other programs and listen. Actually, Brian Alvarez said something that started me on this journey. So I'll go with this. MJF has a lot of input into his programs. And all he's ever watched, to my knowledge, in terms of growing up and stuff like that, was WWE. You and I agree that, like, this program would be fine if MJF were the TNT champion. But MJF is the guy who is the cornerstone of your company. And I understand the thinking here, and the best angle I think to compare this to is if you remember the Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho best friend angle.
Yeah, the list of Jericho thing.
That ended with the list of KO, and Kevin Owens was the whatever world title Raw had at the time. But you also knew at the same time that Kevin Owens wasn't the guy because this was the kind of angle they were doing with him. Because probably Roman was the champ on the other show at the time. So it's whimsical, and it's Eddie Haskell-esque, and it's comedy, and it's, you know, I fully expect the Cole MJF match to be nothing but an Eddie Guerrero versus Eddie Guerrero type match where they're both trying to just cheat each other the entire time to play that for comedy. And I don't know if that'll go over as well as people think. I think that crowd will eat it up. But I think if you're watching that and you're not into the ironic comedy of that wrestling at that time, I don't know. I agree with you. It doesn't do much for the world title, and I want this world title to actually mean something. I mean,
at a certain point, I guess here's my thought about the world title, right? And like, this is how it works across all companies. And I think the world title serves as a meta commentary for the broader company. It is the flagship of the brand. That top program, you know, sort of is like a mission statement of what the company is. And for good or for ill, I think the Bloodline storyline, though it is extraordinarily long in the tooth at this point, is an accurate reflection of WWE at its best. They make cinema wrestling, brother, and that's what they do. I think that was 100% consistent. I think that MJF as champion, if it is a reflection of AEW as a company right now, I think it really sort of reflects like a bit of the identity crisis of the company. Is MJF like Mr. Good Match? You know, is MJF Mr. Comedy Yuck Yuck? The week to week on this is sort of inconsistent.
Well, it's funny because Punk's over on Saturday doing a Cody Rhodes style show. If Cody were in charge of Collision,
like, is CM Punk the champion? I mean, like, to add even more further confusion, like, how legitimately the champion is MJF?
Yeah, because Punk's saying I have, you know, right. He's intimating he has a belt with him. So, yeah.
I mean, he certainly said he's never lost the title rightfully.
Right. Right. So he says
that has been explicitly stated.
Yes.
It's like Punk's character in this universe, and thus all of Punk's fans, would not view him or do not view MJF as like fully champion.
Right.
And I think that's only compounded by MJF being like, oh, I have no friends. Nobody likes me. I never got to go bowling.
Let's stay in the AEW neighborhood for a while, because there's a few other points I want to get to. Are they paying off this Jericho thing during Blood and Guts, you think? Because I have the strong feeling that after that Wheeler Yuta match last week, he wrote something, you know, disappointing, which made everybody think he was injured. I think it's a work. I think Jericho is still in this Blood and Guts match after Yuta has to quote-unquote drop out, and Callis needs a guy he can trust in there. And I think he's still Larry Zbyszko in 1992. I think he blows it for the BCC, and then the BCC beat the crap out of him? Or is this going to be something that they hold on to until after all this stuff is done and it's just kind of a work in progress?
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
So I could totally see Jericho pitching that the Jericho Appreciation Society needs to be turned babyface. Like, Sammy's already on his way. People love Daniel Garcia. People love me. They love the bucket hat. Why don't we just turn the whole group face and have us feud with the Blackpool Combat Club?
Boy, it feels like that a little bit, doesn't it? Although yeah. I think maybe Daniel Garcia stays heel and everybody else goes babyface. But
right, but yeah, no, I mean, like Hager for his part, by the way, I actually thought did a pretty decent job with his dialogue.
Oh yeah, no, Jake Hager's never gonna set the world on fire, but
no,
but
I thought he did a good job. I thought legit, like when I was watching, I was like, that's about as good as I've ever seen Hager do anything. So like that, you know, like that's pretty much A level work for him, and it was totally good. I think it does kind of feel like Jericho's finding a way to insert himself into this, but as a babyface, ultimately, like that's where we're going with this.
Nick Wayne should have won his first match on TV. If you weren't gonna let him win his first match,
Swerve is a completely beatable guy too, right? Like Swerve can eat an L and it doesn't affect anything he's doing.
I agree, but I also just think if you're gonna do the weepy video package to get us all in there, I understand. Trust me, I understand. Oh, this is a long time type story in Japan or in a territory where a young guy comes in and gets beat. He's been wrestling for 6 years now, guys. If you're going to do this, if you're going to have him lose to Swerve in his first big match, I'm fine with that. Give him a squash. Introduce him. You know, have him beat Tony Nese week one. Just to beat somebody. That's all. I don't even need...
You would have him come out here and beat Tony Nese?
I would have you go out there and beat Tony Nese week one.
Well, I mean, that's because you want to put me over strong, get me ready for a quality mid-card.
Well, yeah. Well, somebody of Tony Nese's level. How about that?
Right. No.
Woods. who are some other lower? Aaron Solo would have been fine here.
Aaron Solo.
Speaking of which, Chris, I need a musical review of Harley Cameron.
Hmm. What about Harley Cameron?
Did you see the rap video?
Oh, I did. I watched a bit of that. So my review is that I ended up fast forwarding through it.
He's actually got some musical talent. She has auto tune up the yazoo, but she's
I hate that aesthetic. I just hate the auto tune thing. I haven't liked it since it came out back when I was, you know, in my late teens or early 20s. It's just, it didn't do anything for me when I was younger, and time has not changed my opinion on this. This isn't like a, you know, like eating mushroom situation and onion situation where I, you know, mellowed out on these things with age.
I get weird
mumble,
DMs.
Mumble rap will never hit with me.
Yeah, I get
mumble
weird.
Will never hit.
She actually, you know, it looks like even like, I think like Righteous Reg or some of the guys who worked on the Fight Forever soundtrack probably helped writer. I mean, it was really well done especially for a wrestling ramp. But I mean, and there was some effort put into this, and I'm sure Will Washington probably had a little bit to do with it as well. In terms of quality control, I just get weird DMs. It's like, hey, what do you think of Harley Cameron? She's hot, right? Like, yeah, but you know,
wow. I mean, that's what you know. In the music business, a lot of people are at least 5 out of 10s.
Yeah,
It's very common. Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. I know. Hey, like Hawkins, talk to me a little bit later. I know a lot about music. I'm passionate about it, honestly.
Well, you know about like no, I could go there. Yeah, I don't have anything else for Dynamite. You're up.
Let me see if I've got anything else for Dynamite. Yeah, the Owen Hart thing was fine. Look, they're doing a fine job building Sky Blue, or making her more than what she's been, but you know, Ruby Soho. I think Ruby Soho actually is doing a really nice job as a heel right now.
I actually liked that faking the injury with her face thing. I
didn't, but like I like the no future off the top rope. That looked really cool.
That looked really cool.
Like that absolutely worked for me. Nakota Ibushi like debut. I mean, like I saw it coming a mile away, and maybe it's just like I've been watching it for, you know, I've been watching wrestling for some time now, but like, man, Kota Ibushi like coming just does not have the zip that it might have had.
But the Golden Lovers, it's such a great story, Chris.
Tell me your favorite Golden Lovers story.
Well, there's this one time in Japan.
I know.
Sorry. Oh God, the work rate people are gonna be all in the Discord.
No, I mean,
here's where
hold on. I'll give them their moment, right? Like, I recognize that they're like an important tag team in Japan or whatever, but it's just like the fifth person in this angle should have been used for a debut of someone who's got some more tread on the tires than Ibushi. I like Ibushi. I've enjoyed Ibushi. We saw Ibushi wrestle back in Dallas when we were there in 2016.
Yes.
And he's unbelievably entertaining.
Yeah, and I saw the Golden Lovers of the Young Bucks. Yeah.
He's also like in his early 40s now, right?
Yes, yes, he is.
Yeah.
So, just question the strategy. Because right before they did this angle, they did a video package with Lance Archer. And I'm like, if I am in a double cage blood war, and I'm either the BCC or the Elite, give me the 6'7" killer to rub some faces in versus 5'6" Pack or Kota Ibushi, who does very athletic things from high places. I just find, because of modern wrestling indie style, I find that the builds for these blood and guts / war games matches to be very, very lacking in the strategic aspects of the match itself, whereas you could get away with this with the Horsemen, who were all just kick and punch type guys, and you knew and they were fighting other kick / punch type strength guys who could like lift them into the ceiling of the cage because the cage was so low, etc., and was really something. But now in the modern day war games, either in the NXT universe, you don't even have a top on the top of cage and you win by pinfall, or in the big drama in Blood and Guts and AEW is how are they going to get out of the cage to do weird stuff on top of the cage, etc. It becomes very much a Hell in the Cell type of situation. Whereas if you watch the original War Games type of matches, that ceiling was low and it was impressive when somebody was getting body slammed in. Now, sure, you couldn't do all the jumping and stuff you could, but it made for a much more confined, claustrophobic type of fighting for your life type of thing. And I thought it made it somewhat better in my estimation.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the problem with a lot of these cage matches is the Hell in a Cell problem, the Mankind, McFoley, Undertaker thing, where now everyone feels like the climax of one of these cage matches has to be a top of cage spot.
The stipulation isn't enough. It's not right. It's not enough that the point of the cage is to keep you all in there. We need to figure out a way to do something off.
I honestly kind of wish that, like, rather than they should start on top of the cage. That should be the match. The match should actually require them to start on top of the cage and then finish the pin with the pin on the inside. Like, and the game is sort of like, how are they going to end up in the mat inside the cage? That's the best thing I can kind of come up
with. No, but it's a broader point, and I've brought this up numerous times. It's like, you know, when you have a dog collar match and then you're taking out thumbtacks and chairs and tables, it becomes very ECW mid-90s type thing where the stipulation is just kind of a means to do other things in addition to the stipulation, and the stipulation kind of holds no meaning. You're just doing a match. It just happens you have this thing that's a part of it, and it really kind of devalued the violence of it, I think, in some ways, where if you kept it simpler, and that's why I think that's why I like the Punk MJF match so much, or no, it was Briscoe's FTR, because I don't think it ever got to anything more than just you have this giant chain and you can hit them with them. Yeah, I don't have anything more for Dynamite.
No, I we've now at this point talked about everything on Dynamite.
Okay, your turn.
All right, so like let's move on to NXT here.
Okay, I did not watch it, but you can tell me some things from it.
Yeah. So your pal Kalani Jordan had another match. She's now being mentored by Dana Brooke.
Okay.
Yeah, she had a match against Cora Jade. I thought she looked. She did look sharp at various points in the match. She had a couple of, I want to say, like, nice suplexes. Like, the form looked good on those. She's obviously better at the gymnastics part of this than the wrestling part of it, but she shows promise. They had Cora Jade beat her, which is baffling to me. And, you know, I mean, she's still got some issues to work out. But I thought that was an interesting choice. And then later on, I'll do one other one here. Tiffany Stratton and Ivy Nile just did not hit.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately for me, it was just not quite there.
The only thing I saw clips from the Chase U versus Charlie Dempsey and Drew Gulak, where Thea Hale got the arm lock on Gulak, and I go, just give me these people every week in something wacky, and I'm happy with
I know. I just don't understand why Duke Hudson remains the babyface and like Dempsey and Gulak are heels. It seems to me like Chase, Gulak, and Dempsey are like the most natural unit in the world, and Duke Hudson's never made any sense in any of this.
In internal communications, by the way, Baron Corbin is now full time on NXT. Are you liking what they're doing with him?
No. I mean,
he's in the woods apparently, going for like sprite fairies or something.
No,
there's like, your cult again.
Right,
your cult of nature.
Well, right. And again, we talked about my views about these things, but we don't need to revisit that. I just don't. I mean, Baron Corbin has gone through so many identity crises at this point, and I mean, what do you want? What will we do with him? Make him the mid-card champion? Like that's to me like maybe the most useful thing you could do with him. Even as a placeholder NXT champion. Beating Baron Corbin would mean nothing for some young up-and-comer. He's Baron Corbin. I know he's made a lot of money in WWE, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. But, like, beating him, you know, him as a top champion would do nothing. I guess he could be useful as a mid-card champion or maybe as a tag champion for the company.
Now you're beating your champion with Finn Balor coming down there and beating Carmelo Hayes on the every week.
Well, like the idea that the thing that kills me is it's called Trick Mellow. Like Trick comes first.
Yes.
What kind of sense has that made? God.
Yes. Like, I agree.
Mellow almost feel like Trick's sidekick at some points.
Yeah, that feels like almost Vince sending a memo. build up this trick guy because he's the tall one and that's who I want type of a thing. And it gives you kind of pause a little bit.
Yeah, you got the tall one and you got the short one.
I'll tell you who's great. And I watched clips of this one. Like I said, I didn't watch the show, but I watched clips. Ilya Dragunov is awesome. Ilya Dragunov.
Okay. So this is where I was going to go next. That match was actually like, look, I've been down on NXT and I do generally kind of like work the speed button on this. I was like, let's see how this one goes. This is actually pretty sweet. And like Breaker hits this spear on Ilya Dragunov that like, it's just a top notch spear. It looks so
he might have the best spear in wrestling.
Dude, I mean, Breaker's good. I know his name is stupid. I hate like that he's Briacker, but like son of Steiner, you know, Frankensteiner Jr. Like, I'm into this guy.
No, I wish they'd make him a Steiner. I mean, they made him a badass, but you know, just make him a Steiner for God's sakes.
He is like a Steiner and Goldberg combined.
Yes.
And it rules. Like, he's good. And he's even a good promo, especially when he's like a little more ramped down. He has an ability to do a more subdued thing that neither his father nor his uncle could do.
Yeah. No, I agree. He's like Rick and Scott were so into the vitamins. Like Rick was never a agile type. He was pure power. He was a lot like one of his first tag team partners, Buzz Sawyer. I mean, Scott was really the good Lord. You see what he's doing at that size in terms of that, and Braun blows him away in terms of athleticism.
Oh my
God,
dude. No, I know. Like, and like, yeah, Scott could do some things, but like Braun's got a lot of power. And
Braun's an evolved version of Scott in so many ways.
Right. Well, but like also with some of the power distribution of Rick, like there's something very Rick in like, the way he uses his power and less Scott-like. But then the mobility is just like off the charts, dude. Breaker's really good. Dragunov's a lovely foil for him. Like that match was actually legitimately good and is actually worth your time, in my opinion. And then the fate of Tony D'Angelo. I know. It's play for Oscar season. But Tony D and Mackenzie Mitchell they managed to run an emotional gamut that I have not been on since the last time I viewed Citizen Kane.
Let me cut you off real quick. Okay, Mackenzie Mitchell is great. I don't care what anybody says. Mackenzie is one of the best Dasha bots they've ever had back there in terms of actually doing give and take. Because she actually almost treats her job a little bit too seriously at times, but she's fantastic. I love her. Continue.
Well, it felt to me as though this was not actually taped live in any way, shape, or form. Mackenzie did her part, and then D'Angelo did his part. D'Angelo, you could feel his heart breaking in that promo. It hurt me, Jeff.
I have nothing else to say. This is
no. I mean, you know, that's
they have all. They have criminals running all around NXT, and the one they get is Tony D.
I love the idea that if Stax loses the match, Tony D goes to trial. Like that's like an all time stipulation for me.
I am frustrated, Chris. I'm going to go to the main roster right now.
Oh, good. That'll easily take the edge off.
I love Imperium. I love them as a stable. When they didn't bring Giovanni Vinci up at first, it felt like a Vince call. Because Vince, he has his predilections. He doesn't like bald guys at times. Well, what about Steve Austin? Look, he was the ringmaster before he was Stone Cold and making Vince money. All right? It feels like they're going to either turn him or send him back to NXT. but even more so, let's go into this. The NXT people who were drafted in the 2023 draft, with the exception of Zoe Stark, are doing nothing.
Zoe looks good, though.
Yes, when Zoe, she's not breaking noses, she looks great. Yeah, but she's in a good position.
This is in a good position.
But let me go through these people.
Yeah.
Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. Just absolutely. I mean, look, they got they had a pretty good match with Ronda and Shayna. I gotta admit, Isla Dawn over delivered in that match. But they're nothing on SmackDown except the Spooky Witch team. Indy Hartwell, nothing on the main roster right now. Apollo Crews, nothing on the main roster right now. JD McDonagh. They have a vignette once every so often, and they teased him joining the Judgment Day, and he's not in there yet. Zoe Stark, as said before, she's doing fine. She's teamed with Trish. She's looking good. Pretty Deadly. I thought they'd be money on the main roster. I thought this is a tailor-made team to get over on the main roster. Nothing right now. Katana Chance and Caden Carter. Nothing. Cameron Grimes, nothing. I was watching SmackDown before he went to air. Grayson Waller is floundering because he gets killed by Edge, and now he's doing a calling out Legends gimmick because he called out The Rock, and The Rock ain't doing much. You know, isn't going to come up and fight him. He was on the headset, and really, I mean, all that charm that you saw in NXT has been produced out of him. Inda Sheer, nothing. They're doing vignettes and Veer's coming again, pretty much. Odyssey Jones, MIA.
When's Veer getting here?
No, they did an Inda Sheer promo on Raw, so it looks like they're gonna switch. I mean, they're gonna bring them in and how do I forget his name? Punjabi Prison.
Oh man. Okay. One Punjabi Prison classic cage match format too.
Jinder Mahal. Never mind. Jinder Mahal. That's my fault.
Okay.
But yeah, Jinder Mahal, Sangha, and Veer are a unit, and they're gonna play the evil foreigners type of a thing. But why did we bring all these guys up and now there's nothing? They're not doing anything with any of these guys, and it's. I don't even think Odyssey Jones has been seen.
If I was Cameron Grimes, I would be hoping I can someday get released because I could go to Tony and pitch hey, bring me in as the mysterious millionaire who's going to challenge MJF. Like, MJF's out there talking about this money, and then you have like 3 weeks of vignettes of some big money guy coming in, and then you debut Grimes on there.
Cameron Grimes was on TV for a couple weeks, got the big win over Baron Corbin, and then nothing. And he's been floundering because they're just, well, creative has nothing for you. Creative has nothing for you. Creative has nothing for you. It's like, this to the moon. I am flustered at what is going on. Either Pritchard or Vince look at him and go, well, look at him. He's too small to be a star.
No, and then like there was like he was too hairy and scruffy. Like the whole thing.
So they shaved him up.
Joie de vivre that they wanted to take away, like going wax. And it's like, dude, that's not who this guy is.
Yes, they cleaned up the caveman gimmick, so to speak, and the hillbilly gimmick. They brought him out there, and he just looks like a dude.
Yeah,
and they won't let him do his to the moon type of thing or whatever. He's just a wrestler with a plain look, and of course they're going, well, look at how plain he looks. He's not a star. It's so
because he wrestles in like black tights. If you don't let him be a character, it's not like nor should he be wearing like purple money tights or anything like that. Like he's always been doing the black on black look. He is a character and a guy who gets by through his personality. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. It's just like
yes.
It's frustrating, and this is definitely a guy I could see in the other company being absolutely of service to the main event program just very easily. He's a natural foil for MJF. You have the Southern money man versus the Northern money man.
Yeah.
kind of the uptight northern guy and like the kind of fun loving, carefree, you know, southern guy. Yeah, I think that could be a lot of fun.
All right, I got my piece out. Your turn, sir.
You spoke your piece.
I spoke my piece. I spoke my truth, Chris.
I know, I know. Well, I mean, they just don't get it. I think it's great that Tommaso Ciampa lost to The Miz, so that's cool.
Not only that, but they brought it back Bronson Reed and again. Just said, here's a guy.
Yeah, you know, they gotta give him credit for rehabilitating Judgment Day over the last 6 months.
Yes,
they are in a much better place. They're a credible stable.
That's all Dom for the most part. Although, don't
get
me wrong,
Henry, don't sleep on Rhea. Rhea's got Dom,
and Priest all have. They all have legitimately separate personalities, other than Judgment Day.
Yeah, no, there's definitely some swag here.
Yes.
Yeah, and outside of that, you know, I don't have a lot more to say about.
I still can't believe they haven't done anything with Pretty Deadly. That makes me angry, almost. Because who did they team them with when they first came up?
This is the problem. Like, and I mean, this gets to. I was saying earlier about how like your top program or whatever is like a meta commentary on your company. This is like a critique I would have of WWE in allocating every freaking belt that you own more or less to the Bloodline storyline angle for the last 2 years. I know that Owens and Zayn are now the champions, but they have to stay the champions for a while as sort of the off ramp out of the Bloodline storyline. That's we're on the off ramp for the Bloodline thing still. You've had every title belt tied up. Also, what was the logic? I mean, ultimately, in consolidating both the tag belts and both the singles titles onto one, like you have like Raw and SmackDown titles, you have Raw and SmackDown tag titles, either completely consolidate them and just have one pair of belts at this point, or like why would you even have like someone lose just the Raw like singles title?
Yeah. It's almost like, okay, that part of the Bloodline thing has passed, but we don't want to split up these titles.
Right.
We want to get the tag titles off the Usos to get that away from it, but we don't want to split those up after that. And then they've created this worthless Seth Rollins title.
Yes. Right. This is like the title for being Seth Rollins.
Yes.
This is like the Seth Rollins World Heavyweight Championship.
Go out there, do your laugh, and have them sing along. That's all it is. That's all the Seth Rollins program is these days. I got nothing else. You got anything?
I don't. You could call it the loser weight title, though.
Oh, jeez. This has been Shake Them Ropes. Next week, Shake Them Kids? No, that sounds terrible.
No.
Kids Them Ropes?
Wait, we don't? Oh, so now we've turned against Shake Them Kids. Oh, that's problematic.
Well, I just find, you know, people, Jeff, you know, the children who are shaken suffer brain damage.
Oh, that's what the doctors on the big newspaper medias are saying. But like, all right, that's fine. Next week, yes, we are having not one, but two special guest reviews. Yeah, two.
Yes. Both.
That's two. It's the one, number after one. They've been dropping them all week. We're up to like five or six at this point. But we're going to have two guest reviewers here, and they are going to be reviewing Rey Mysterio versus Eddie Guerrero Halloween Havoc 1997 in honor of Kevin Owens' shirt, and also Sasha versus Bayley from TakeOver 2013. Is memory serves, or is that 2014?
I think it's a little later. I think it was 2014, I think. But, 2014. Okay. But anyways, these are children we are trying to bring into the cult of wrestling. Yet another cult.
I don't even know that. I think they're going to give us some quality content. And,
okay, yeah.
They like the microphone, so it'll give them a chance to talk into
and,
it.
And so Chris doesn't have to watch a lot of wrestling this week.
Right. And this gets to a running theme of mine, which is, why should I, learned, educated, great adult, have to do work when children could do it for me?
Well, that's what my parents said when I had to mow the lawn. It's like, why do I have to mow the lawn? Well, that's why we had kids.
I mean, if you think about it, Hawkins, right? Like, how many kids do you really need to maintain a house? The number I've got based on my calculations is about 10. You know, obviously they can't do everything, but you can trade, you make little tradesmen and tradeswomen out of the children.
Mm. And next week, Chris will tell me how babies are made. You can follow me at Crap Game 13.
If you want to find out about that, just stay. We'll talk for a few minutes after this.
I don't think we should.
No, we can. We can talk.
You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes, all one word. Quick plug from me. I did Music of the Mat that was released this week. Me reviewing Terry Funk's Great Texan with Andrew Rich. Chris, it was not a country album. It was more of a kind of late stage disco type of album at times.
Oh my God, really?
There's a lot of Japanese synth / jazz players on this, and it's almost like R&B / look it up on YouTube or actually listen to the show.
There's actually a lot of Japanese session players on disco tracks back in the day.
Yes. Well, yeah, listen to the show, you'll get some of the tracks on there. Let me do my other show. Fight Game Media, patreon.com/fightgamemedia, $5 a month. I do the Dynamite Show with Paul Ace Fontaine. It's released about two hours after Dynamite is finished. We do a thorough deconstruction of all things AEW. Chris does stuff on the gram. He's going to tell you about it now.
Yeah. So, I did do, actually about a month ago now, an episode of Don't Worry About the Government. If you're interested in that, patreon.com/DWATG. I also just got done doing a 4-week lecture series on Jimi Hendrix. You can get the entire archive from me. If I can just say so, I loved putting this together. This has actually been my bestseller. And I did leave this basically kind of going like, oh, it turns out Jimi Hendrix is actually my favorite guitar player of all time. I knew, respected him, all of this sort of stuff, but like, this has just been a tremendous eye opener for me. I loved this thing. So, for those of you interested in his stuff, I think that this is as good of a primer as anything you could possibly find on the internet or YouTube, as I watch most of it. So hit me up if you're interested in that. And of course, there are always guitar lessons available. Message me on the gram for guitar, bass, music theory, music production. And I guess I'll mention it. I am a music producer. So if you're like working on a track and want it professionally mixed at a reasonable rate, please hit me up.
Wow. where? On the gram?
On Instagram. Sorry, I just saw some spillage happen or something.
Uh-oh, the kids or the cats are getting
out of control. I guess it is time for us to wrap up the show here.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week.
Music. It's not just part of our daily lives. It's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat, only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.